Well, what you think?
I'm like, get into this new intro. Intro. So for those of y'all that are listening, you couldn't see what we were experiencing, but it was like clarity, mental awareness, meditate, mindfulness, center. And then here we are. That was
I love it.
Upgrade.
Oh, listen, we're upgraded. Thank y'all for tuning into The Whole Child. This is Bianca Goolsbee, and I have my phenomenal co-star with me, Kimberlyn Jackson, and we are here to talk about real conversations that impact your children and tapping into the whole child.
I'm so glad to be back. It's been a bumpy road, and I know we're going to get into the things tonight, but just listen, it's really been something. But I'm just so glad to be back. I am excited for the new studios and the upgrading and the things, like the whole child is doing things. And we're glad that y'all are here because we have so much that we really need to talk about and really make sure that we unpack something. Right. So we need y'all to talk to us and give us your perspective and your thoughts about what we are talking about here today, because we are always trying to make sure we have real conversations about breaking cycles of trauma and that we're building positive coping mechanisms. So, hey, boo.
Hey, girl. Hey.
There. Hey, girl. Goosby gang representing. But I don't even know where to start. It's just so much.
It really is.
It's so much, Bianca. My hair done grown out 5 inches since the last song. You're like, my God.
Oh, man. Yes. So let's just do a basic recap of like, where have we been during this time? The last episode we had was when we were talking about the insurrection and the trauma that was inflicting on children and having intentional conversations. I hope that parents actually were intentional to talk about that, because the kids definitely seen those images on social media and, you know, all over TV. So,
yeah. And I've been in some spaces where the conversation has been pretty interesting, right? And there has definitely been an impact on people, not just our children, on our teachers, on our administrators, on district staff, in all across the country, right? So it was really important to do that episode, because that's something that we're all still dealing with the fallout from. You know, every time I have an opportunity to turn on the news, I hear more arrests that are being made and, you know, more information that is coming to the light. So, yeah, that's the last thing that we talked about. And then in the meantime, Lord have mercy, so many more things have happened. I know there in Hillsborough County, where my heart still lives, even though I'm not there physically, there have been a lot of things that have come to the forefront of the work that's being done to really advocate for our kids. And I heard a snippet of something you were talking about on one of your shows, like you have presented some solutions to some of these things, right? So I try not to be in these spaces of admiring problems, right? It's so easy to kind of get caught in this vortex of, you know, this is happening, that's happening, blah, blah, blah. So we try to be solution focused when we're here. So I was wondering if we could unpack a little bit of that and then have a real candid conversation about some things I have been experiencing as well. So kick us off.
Okay, so you can find this article, and I will actually copy and paste the link right now in the comments, so you can refer back to it later. But back in 2019, I wrote an article for the Tampa Bay Times to outline the solutions that I felt could really impact our children. And so it was titled Counselors, Meditation, Influencers. Here are 7 ways to help our students. And so I break this down into 7 parts that we'll break down. The first part of this is a story from a child. I had a pen pal program where the students were able to just share freely about their thoughts and how they felt. And I felt that that was really important in my classroom to build relationships and also to hear out from them, especially I can't teach children that I don't know, and right. They can't learn from someone that they don't know. So Moving down. So solution number one was having a licensed mental health counselor that are relatable to our children. And keyword there is relatable. Mm-hmm. And in that, I was saying that we need to address the trauma. And I referenced the lack in the district by the ACLU report, where it says that we have the lowest psychologist ratio in the state. And so with that data, there were 139 schools that did not have a school psychologist. And we know that some of the psychologists are actually rotating. They are not full time. And again, some of them are not relatable to our children. So how forthright will our children come to these people to have conversations about what's really happening and addressing that trauma? I don't think that the success rate is very high.
Yeah, I want to come back to that one because I got a lot to say about that. So let's give the people like the rest and we'll see if there's any commentary to share there. But I want to definitely come back to number one. So pin that.
All right. All right, perfect. All right. So solution two was to have meditation rooms or spaces that allow children to reset. Mm. And so it's really important that children reflect on their behavior and reflect on their actions. And so having those spaces that are safe spaces for children would be really impactful, I think. And so this is why I indicated that here. I also was referring to how there are some schools that do not have working AC units. And so how safe will children feel in those spaces where there's no comfort? And so I was explaining in that solution that we need to be very conducive and make sure that our children feel welcomed and also feel supported in those spaces.
Yeah. And this is something that's not really difficult. And it's not just limited to school spaces. It also has to do with you can create these spaces at your house for your kids, right? So it really is just having a space kind of away from everything else that might be happening right now. So at a school site, like I had the pleasure of being able to do this in a few spaces before I left Florida, it literally can be a rug, a beanbag chair, and a lamp. Like just having a space for a child to be able to center themselves and process what they're feeling at the time. It can be just that simple. So when you're thinking about at home, having a space, it might be, they also call them like peace corners. So having a space in an area of a room that isn't like a lot of traffic or like the TV isn't on, maybe having some headphones so that they can listen to a mindfulness video or listen to some calming music, and then giving them again that opportunity to reflect and reset. So that's super important.
Yeah. So solution number three was to encourage social media influencers to create campaigns to address the violence in schools. There's a lot of social media influencers. There was the episode that I just aired tonight at 8, The Underground, and I was talking about problematic influencers. And so these are the people that your children look up to. I think of the word role model and I think of the word mentor, and these are people that you look up to because you spend a lot of time with them. Well, your children are spending a lot of time with these people that they have connected with on the internet. And so they are influenced to do certain behaviors. And so I've talked about the fight pages. I've talked about some of the things that are shared online. And so one of the things is to have the actual influencers talk to the children and influence them to be good role models instead of telling them to quit school to be YouTubers.
Right. And I know this is one of your favorite lines. I'm going to go ahead and borrow it. Parents, check the cell phones so that you can see who your children are following, right? But then also, we all have circles of influence. So knowing that each of us knows somebody who is a social media influencer, who has a platform. So putting the pressure on them to change that narrative.
Yeah. So solution number four was to create a task force to observe social media. So like when we have all of these school threats, a lot of that is done through social media. When there's a lot of bullying going on, that is done through social media. So school districts need to pay more attention to what's happening on the phones, because that is having such a external control in our schools, bigger than what people actually realize. So there needs to be a task force to talk to parents about what to look for. There needs to be a task force to talk to children on what's appropriate and not appropriate. And also a task force to watch and observe the behavior, because I'm telling you that children are recording child pornography and right. they're posting it and tagging it at the school.
Mm. Whew. So this makes me think about how the police had to create this type of task force or this type of opportunity in their force for fighting crime, right? So I think it's negligent of us to not empower our educational spaces to have task force dedicated to looking at social media or looking for the fight pages or looking for those things that are there, because that is literally the way that the world is shifting. So I think if we continue to live in this antiquated space, we're consistently behind the eight ball. So right. I love that that suggestion or that solution to create those task force to look for those things, because we got to be just as savvy as them. You know, exactly. And right now we're out here like, what are you talking about? The Twitch and the Kick and the people probably not even on Kick no more. That's probably gone now, right? And Snapchat and, you know, like all of the things that we don't even know. Like, even as you hear me talking, I'm like laughing and being silly, but for real, I don't know all the things that kids are on right now. So it's really important for us to be just as savvy as they are so that we are able to be preemptive in our attempts to quell some of these things that are happening.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Solution number five was to require implicit bias and diversion training for the resource officers on campus. And the justification for that was the ACLU data that shows that Hillsborough County leads the state in the school-to-prison pipeline, and that there are more children arrested in Tampa than any other, you know, city. So it's really important that we look at that and to not use officers to fill in a gap right. when we need to have our mental health resources before they get there. We need to be proactive instead of reactive.
So I got a lot to say about that one too. So I'm going to couple that and pin that with the solution one that I had pinned earlier, and we'll be right back to that.
All right. So solution number six, you already know, teacher pay, and not what Ron DeSantis attempted to try to do and say that he raised, you know, salaries, but it only applied to new teachers. It wasn't for the teachers that have put their blood, sweat and tears into this career. And they're still making around the same when they were working 10 years ago. It's unacceptable. Right. So making sure that we put value back into education. And so making public education the best choice out there. This is our tax dollars at work. And so we need to make sure that we're best utilizing our tax dollars to fund what we need to fund to make sure that our children achieve.
Yeah. And one thing that I think is an inescapable truth is two facts. One, that every single person in America has come into contact with the education system, right? Every single person. But two, educators are the ones who teach those who are in these high-paying positions. So how are educators not worthy of getting paid what they are worth and what they are putting into the world? Yet once someone gets into the world, it's like, oh, let's value you and let's pay you, right? So respecting education as the true craft that it is, I think is just so important, because so many times that just doesn't happen. And I'm not going to say so many times, all of the time. That just doesn't happen. Educators don't get paid what they're worth. And the amount of work that we do off the clock, the amount of hats that we wear demands that we really do get valued by how much we are compensated for our work. So that one is just a nationwide situation that has to be rectified. And my hope is that with our new administration, with Biden Harris, especially with our First Lady, Dr. Jill Biden, being an educator, that we may actually be able to finally see some movement on that. Because it's inescapable. Like, it just has to happen.
Yeah, for sure. And the last solution that I have is to educate parents on the dangers of social media. And again, I can't stress this enough. Parents, check the cell phone. I can't stress it enough. I have made videos about it. I have put on a wig and, you know, turned it to entertainment to just let y'all know that there's kids that are being snatched up. I was just tagged in a video 20 minutes ago before I went on live about how a 22-year-old was trying to meet a child and it was a sting operation. And they had him waiting at the hotel and they got him. Like, I literally was just tagged in this and this happened in Florida. Like, this is happening all over. And there's people that are trying to meet children online, and parents, you have to know who your kids are talking to. You have to know. You have to know who is influencing your children. You have to know. Because if not, you're putting them in danger for sure.
And just being so intentional about having those conversations. And that kind of goes back to a couple of your earlier points of creating the space to have these conversations with our kids. And I know that's something that we talk about often. It's necessary. And as parents and as caretakers of children, we can't get in the habit of sticking our head in the sand and thinking somebody else is going to take care of it. Like, this is our responsibility as the adults in their lives to make sure that we are creating the space to have those conversations, educating ourselves, making sure we're paying attention. This is a safety issue. You know, back in the day, it was OB home before the streetlights come on. Now they're actually in the house and things are happening when they're in the house because we're not aware of who they're communicating with, right? So being so much more intentional in that, I think, is super important. So if we can go back to the top of this here solution situation, and your first solution was have licensed mental health counselors that are relatable to our children in every school to address the trauma. And you know, this podcast is called The Whole Child, and it's all about addressing the trauma that that our students are encountering. But I'm going to expand that a little bit and just talk about the trauma that stakeholders are encountering. So when I say stakeholders, I'm talking about our kids, I'm talking about our teachers, I'm talking about our administrators, our families. Like, all of this is a collective view at things that we can do, especially as adults, to deal with our trauma so that we are able to help our children deal with the trauma. And a part of that is making sure that we have licensed mental health counselors. So I want to tell y'all a story. So most of you all know that have been following us that I lived in Tampa for the past 17 years. And this past summer, in the middle of the global pandemic, I decided to pick up my life and move to Pennsylvania. So in that process, that in itself was traumatic enough, right? Just being in a pandemic, picking up my whole life and moving to an entirely different state, an entirely different region of the country, just trying to acclimate to weather and new social norms and cultural environment. It's been a lot, okay? In that, I also started a new job. So that's another change, right? So having said all that, you know, I get involved and I get into my work and, you know, I get to be in all these spaces. But one of the things that I was missing was time with my therapist. So my therapist was in Florida, right? Now, if you know anything about mental health professionals, that they are licensed to work in a particular state, right? So there's not like there is national licensing, but most therapists are licensed in the state where they live or they operate. So my counselor was licensed in Florida. I no longer live in Florida. So even though things were virtual, technically, because I live in Pennsylvania, I had to find a new therapist. When I tell you, this has been the most exhausting process ever to find a new therapist. And I'm going to tell you why. So what did your thing say? Have licensed mental health counselors that are relatable to our children. So let's talk a little bit about relatability. And let me ask you, when you say relatability, what did you mean about that? And then I'm going to tell you what my experience is.
So just making sure that they understand, like, you understand my background, you understand where I come from, you can understand where I'm at. Like, you can actually understand. The process of understanding, the desire to want to understand, is really important.
Mm-hmm. So what I know about mental health professionals is that they get kind of like a general training, right? So for instance, I rely very heavily on my faith, and I'm a Christian. So I often look for a counselor that is a Christian because I don't want to have to explain those nuances. Now, any counselor is able to talk to me from a spiritual standpoint, right? You know, a higher power-like type of situation. However, the nuances of Christianity, or, you know, if I talk about something, a church experience, or if I say something like church hurt, or, you know, somebody caught the Holy Ghost, or, well, like, I want my counselor to already know what I'm talking about. Like, I don't want to have to go through a whole educational experience about what it means to be a Christian and what that looks like and all of that, right? So the relatability piece that I've been struggling with in this search is really and has really been about my Blackness. And how do I find a counselor that understands my Blackness, right? Mm-hmm. So for any of you who are listening that have never seen us, we are Black. I live my life as a Black woman every single day, and it's been this way for the past 40 years, right? So it's something that is a part of me. It's not something that I can enter a space and not have my Blackness be considered. And what happens as we're looking for support from mental health professionals, whether that be through therapy or whether we're talking about school psychologists or school counselors, is as people who live in Black skin, people who live in brown skin, people who live in othered skins, oftentimes have to explain why something is bothering them, right? So let's use an example as a child, for instance. A Black girl walks into a classroom and, you know, her hair isn't done, right? She couldn't get her hair done over the weekend, and she has her hood on. And the teacher says, you need to take off your hood. And she says, I'm not taking off my hood. And then the teacher says, you know what? You being mouthy, you're being disrespectful. Go to the office, right? So now she gets to the office and now she gets disciplined because she wouldn't take her hood off. But if we took the time to get to the root of why she isn't taking her hood off, she's not taking her hood off because she's embarrassed because her hair isn't done. So instead of us then deploying and wrapping our arms around her and saying, love, I understand. Like, I have some products in my office. What's up? We could hook you up. Boo, we could do your edges. You'd be good. Right. Or saying, like, the hood, what is it bothering? Nothing, right? So it, like, why is that the battle that we're choosing to fight? So she would have to then explain as she enters that space why she felt it necessary to disobey a directive because of the cultural implications for a Black girl to not have her hair done, right? Whereas she could come to me and say, Ms. Jackson, my hair not done, and I got you. I got a mirror behind my door. Gone in there, what you need? I got some gel, I got a brush. Like, what we need to have happen? We braiding this thing up, like, what we doing today? Because I understand why that's so important, right? But someone who doesn't live this life may not necessarily understand that. So that is a kid type of example. But then when we take it to examples, let's use a parental example. So a parent gets a phone call, they need to come and pick up their kid because of X, Y, and Z situation, right? The parent was literally probably running errands, whatever. So they, okay, I'm here. I come, I'm in my t-shirt, my leggings, and flip-flops. Like, you told me to come get my baby, here I am. Then you tell me I'm coming to pick up my baby because her hair wasn't done, because she wouldn't take her hood off. So now I got to sit up here and argue with you about that. But because I'm not dressed in a professional manner that you think is important, you then classify parent into this unprofessional box and then decide that parent doesn't deserve the respect as parent. And now you start to treat the parent as less than because they showed up in a package that you felt wasn't professional.
Girl, you preaching tonight.
right? So when we talk about the, and this is why I also said the implicit bias training that you have mentioned is applicable here, because it's not just law enforcement, it's schools, period, right? You and I were just listening to a workshop this morning in Hillsborough County, and there was a story that was shared about diversity, and it was a story that was situated in whiteness to celebrate Black History Month. Like, what? So this egregious misunderstanding of what it means to occupy Black bodies, what it means to deal with systemic racism on so many different levels, when we're talking about educational spaces, when we're talking about in housing, when we're talking about in finances, when we're talking about in healthcare, when we're talking about in the job market. Like, there are so many implications that are there that I don't want to have to explain when I'm trying to get help from a mental health professional. I don't want to have to explain how I wasn't able to sleep because I feel like I might lose my job because I'm being terrorized on my job. And then that is now impacting my job performance, which is now impacting my health. But when I go and say that I am anxious or I have situations going on, then I'm told, oh, it's all right. Pull yourself up by the bootstraps. You'll be okay. When I'm literally having mental health breakdowns every other day, like, I don't want to have to explain that. So is that relatability piece and really understanding how all of this manifests in the lives of non-white people, it's not a battle we should have to fight.
Yeah.
That's what you thinking?
I'm just like, you just preached a whole sermon. Like, there's nothing that I can say to follow that up other than like, girl, you said that. When we really think about this thing, like, people have to understand, like, our kids need a special type of care. And if you're not willing to put in the work, if you're not willing to try, then you gotta go, because your bias is setting children up to fail. I think about my upbringing, and I think about my educational path, and I think about how many times I was discounted in a classroom because of the color of my skin. Mm-hmm. I can't even count on my hand how many times I had an educator that looked like me. Mm. So it's just, wow. I really hope that people are listening and taking in what you're saying.
Yeah. So, okay. So to the discounting, right? And we can stop sharing and kind of just chat for a little bit, but I do want to share my screen in a little bit. So I'll let you know when that is, because I want to give y'all a resource. But when you talk about the discounting, I want us to imagine, and many of us have experienced this, imagine walking into a room and being discounted just because you came in a certain package. Right. So one of my roles in the work that I do is in diversity, equity, and inclusion. And the constant mission and fight is to get people to understand that it manifests in small, nuanced ways. Right. I believe we've talked before about microaggression.
Yes.
And I just want to refresh our memories of understanding that microaggressions are seemingly small and nuanced events, statements, behaviors that happen that have a major impact on a person, right? So I often use my hair as an example. I was laughing at the front end. I'm like, my hair done grown out like 5 inches. But the ability for me to be able to wear my hair in its natural state and the way that it grows out of my head is something that we had to fight for. They literally just passed laws, the Crown Act in California, in New York, and these laws were meant to make it illegal to penalize someone because they wear their hair the way that it grows out of their head. Like last year and the year before. like in the 2000s that we are still fighting a battle about being able to wear our hair the way that it naturally grows out of our head. So imagine me walking in, the first thing that you see is I'm Black, right? Then you recognize that I'm a woman. Then you recognize that I have the audacity to sit up here and wear my hair the way that it grows out of my head. I haven't even said a word yet, right? Then I speak and you might hear my accent because I'm from New Orleans, right? Then after all of that, you might finally say, well, let me listen to the words that's coming out of her mouth because she might have something to say that might make a difference. But I had to fight against all of those things for you to even listen to me because you underestimated me the moment that I walked into the room because of the package that I come in. And this is what happens to our kids every single day. This is what we do to our parents. This is what we do to our colleagues in these spaces. And it is exasperating. Exasperating for someone to have to fight to be seen and heard simply because they come in a package that is not pleasing to your eye. And the level of trauma that comes with that is, there's a movie that's out right now. It's called Bad Hair. Have you heard? I know you don't really be watching TV.
Now, you know, I ain't seen no movie.
It's on Netflix. It's called Bad Hair, and it's actually a horror film, okay? Now, right, so let me tell you. So I am not like a horror enthusiast by any means. Like, I literally try not to watch them because I don't want to be scared before I go to sleep, and I have very vivid dreams, right? But the movie is called Bad Hair, and it is centered around this lady that has natural hair, and she wants to gain favor with her boss. So because of that, her boss basically says, you need to change your look and appearance and go get some weave in order to appear more professional, right? So she goes to get this weave, and literally as she's getting the weave and they're showing the process of sewing the weave into her hair, and any of you that have worn weave, you know that it's a very intense process, right? So they're sewing the weave, and then they're talking about how they're sewing somebody else's hair into your hair, right?
Wow.
So I'm like, you know, that's true. They are sewing somebody else's hair into your hair, right? So then it goes through this process of showing the spirits that are attached to the hair that is being sewed into this lady's hair and all the ramifications.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so that's my high-level overview without giving a spoiler. But what it did for me is to think about how many of us as Black women have felt the pressure to change our outward appearance so that we are more palatable to whomever is in charge, that we feel that if I don't present myself in this manner, that I'm not going to be taken seriously. That if I don't go through, you know, if I think back, like I just, y'all, real life, for real, just chopped off my hair not even a year ago, right? So I cut my hair in what, July of last year, right before I moved. And I probably was natural till I think fifth grade. But even prior to that, I used to get my hair straightened with the straightening comb. I'm talking as early as kindergarten because I had dance recitals and all that. Said, straighten your hair out, whatever. But the appreciation of my natural hair and who God created me to be, I really did not fully embrace in its complete and whole fullness until last year, because I always felt that I was more presentable in this flowy hair package. Now, this is not judgment on anybody who feels like that's what you want to do. Like, that's on you. That's not my point. My point is that there is pressure, societal pressure, that tells us that this is the way that we have to present ourselves. So the way that that manifests is people are going through all types of changes and all types of things to present themselves as someone that they may not necessarily truly believe that they are in order to be accepted. That's trauma. Anytime I have to change myself, shrink myself, contort myself, comport myself so that I am able to survive, that's traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that happens with us as adults. Imagine how much more that happens for children. Imagine how much more that happens for our little boys and girls who are trying to prove to their educators, prove to their schools that they are smart. I am worthy. I'm not bad. I don't know why I did what I did. And it's because there's so much trauma that's manifesting that mm-hmm. they don't know how to deal with it, right? But again, back to our point of having relatable mental health counselors. If you have a mental health counselor that doesn't understand those nuances, they can't help the child through that, right? So when I see children, when I see kids do things, the first thing I wonder is, what sparked that? What happened? What happened to you? Not, why are you bad? Why did you do that? Like, you need to get it together, blah, blah, blah. My immediate first thought is, what happened to you? Somebody either spoke some words over you that you believe are now true, or somebody has made you believe that you're not worthy, or somebody has conditioned you to believe this is the only way that you can get attention. Like, what happened to you? Because these are babies. Okay. Mm-hmm. Even if they're in high school, I still call them babies. Because I feel like the world tries to make them grow up too fast. And they're children. They're babies. They don't know nothing. Even if they're 17, 18, they don't know nothing. And those of us who are of age know. We ain't know nothing at 17, 18. We thought we did, but we ain't know a doggone thing. So think about those kids who are walking into these spaces looking for someone to see them, to see their soul, to see the brokenness, to see them hurting inside, to see that they need somebody to give them a hug or to just tell them that they love them. But if I'm not trained in understanding how trauma manifests, especially with racial implications, then as a counselor, my tendency is to deal with the surface level and I'm never getting to the root.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tragic and it's traumatic. So back to my story, looking for a counselor, right? So I wind up getting the opportunity to connect with a counselor who is not Black. And I was trying to explain what it's like to live in Black skin. And I found myself doing all this work of trying to help the counselor to understand why I felt this stuff was traumatic. Now, I'm not like breaking down, passing out, like, oh Lord, I can't go on, like type of thing. But I'm just like, this stuff is traumatic. That's happening to me. So the counselor is steady asking questions. Well, talk to me about this. And what does that look like? And blah, blah, blah. And it became more work than it was worth. Like, I do not have the mental capacity, ma'am, to continue educating you on racial nuances. I can't do it. I cannot. Mm-hmm. While I am trying to seek support, I can't do that. That is not something I'm going to be able to continue to do. So I basically was like, this ain't working. I can't do it. I just can't. I need to talk to somebody who understands. And for me, that's somebody who looks like me. So in my research, I ran across a few spaces that provide counselors. So the issue for me was wanting to use my insurance and all of that. But I also remember, so for a time last year, I didn't even have a job, right? So I have no insurance. So what about the people that don't have insurance? Like, what are they supposed to do? So in my research, I came across this site, and I am so excited to share this site with you all. It's called Dr. K Beauty Healing, okay? And on the site, hopefully I do this right, okay? So on the site, this is basically a platform and it's geared towards Black women, but I do know that there are some spaces for Black men as well. So we'll be intentional in providing those spaces as well. But at any rate, what this is a directory of mental health clinicians across the country who are giving free mental health support. So when you go here, you click on Explore the Directory, and it opens up the opportunity for you to be able to look at a map. And on that map, you can see where therapists are located. Okay, so therapists available. So basically what you do, and I'm going to show you how to do it in just a second, but what you do is you set up an appointment with a clinician, and you basically tell them that you're contacting them because you found them on this site. And they provide free services via this site, up to 10 services. Now, any of us that have 10 sessions, any of us that have medical insurance, we know usually we get like 6 to 8 sessions. And so 10 is a lot. Okay, so I'm just going to put in Florida because that's where you are. And what it does is it brings up the clinicians that are registered in Florida. So when I was looking at this, I was like, oh my gosh, there's my old therapist, right? She's still like hanging out. So that made me happy. But there are 9 clinicians that are here in Florida. And because everything right now is virtual, you can totally connect with them because they're licensed in the state, right? So let's just click on one. So I'll click on Ziamara here since she is in Tampa. And what it does is it tells you their full name, their gender, their background, what have you. It also gives you a way to contact them. So it gives you their website link. It gives you their email address, their physical location, Instagram handle, if provided. It also gives you their area of specialization, how many years they've been in practice, and the demographic that they serve. Wow. So then you simply send an email to these clinicians and you say, hey, I found you on Dr. K Beauty and I really would like to connect with you. And then that's how you connect with them, right? So that's in Florida. So then I'll go to Pennsylvania, which is where I am, because I just want you all to kind of see how many clinicians are here. And some of the clinicians are licensed in multiple states. So that's amazing because like if it's a neighboring state, then they may be licensed there as well. So this is Pennsylvania and you can see that 6, 7, 8 different clinicians. There's also a male that is represented here. So if anyone was looking for a male, that's possible as well. So Dr. K Beauty is the name of the site, the Healing Directory, and thank you for posting that link. But what it did is it allowed me to connect to a therapist that is outside of my insurance, but more able to support me and to provide free sessions to be able to get support, 10 free sessions. So when we're talking about helping to connect people to mental relatable mental health counselors, this is one way we can do that. There are other sites such as Therapy for Black Girls is another one that's very common. Many of those therapists utilize insurance though. So I thought that this one was really powerful because if you don't have insurance, no problem. Simple intake process, they get you in there, you get started. So for anybody that is experiencing any type of, and let me say this, I was about to say that, but I want to retract that. Let me back that up. For any and everybody, we need to be talking to somebody. Okay. So I don't care if you are experiencing symptoms of trauma, even if you're not experiencing those symptoms, I promise you, I bet you your bottom dollar, if you get to a relatable mental health specialist, they will be able to identify trauma that has manifested in your life and you didn't even realize it. Because all of us are carrying generational trauma that we don't even recognize. Those of us who are descendants of slaves, we are carrying that generational trauma with us. And we don't recognize why we do things or why we react to certain things or why certain things don't feel right in our gut or in our spirit. And it's because our ancestors are talking through us like, no, no, no. That is not okay, right? Mm-hmm. So I encourage all of us that are listening to really get connected to a relatable mental health counselor so that we are able to talk through those things, even if we feel fine, because there are still remnants, right? And again, this is about breaking cycles. And the only way that we can break a cycle is if we truly give space and acknowledgement of what we're walking through. and mm-hmm. stop making things so taboo. Just had a call with one of my best friends before we got on, and she got a new job. Wow. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited for you. And the reason that I'm so excited is because she had experienced so much racial trauma at wow. her job that it literally was breaking down her mental health. And as she was telling me about the job, I was just in tears. Like I could barely, I feel myself kind of choking up a little bit right now. I could barely get out the words because I know the impact that it had on her. And she's one of the strongest people I know. And the embarrassment that comes with thinking that we're strong and thinking that we can carry this and, you know, I can get through this and it's not that bad. And, you know, I should be able to work through this. And then recognizing the toll that it's having comes with so much shame for us as Black people because we think that we're supposed to be able to handle it or we're so used to dealing with it that we don't think anything of it. And what I really want to submit and make super transparent is that we deserve environments where we are free to be ourselves. We deserve mm-hmm. environments where we are free to show up in our boldness. Like y'all see my shirt today, it says be bold, be amazing, be you, right? So we deserve environments where we're able to show up as our bold selves without feeling like, let me just go sit over here in the corner so I ain't got to hear nothing from so-and-so today. Let me push down my afro because they be having a problem when it's all picked out. Let me, you know, watch how I speak because if I don't put the sentence together perfectly, they're going to think that I don't have an education, right? We deserve spaces where we are able to just show up and be our free Black self. And those spaces don't exist in a lot of places. So knowing that, it's really important for us to check on each other and to check on our children. Because as adults, we're more capable to say, this is what I'm feeling. I'm feeling some type of way, like this doesn't feel right. But as kids, it manifests as behavior problems. It manifests as continuous trips to the nurse. It manifests as excessive absences. It manifests as lack of motivation and disconnection within the school space. It manifests as excuses about why I can't log on to e-learning. It manifests as disruptive behaviors of, you know, not wanting to be in spaces or having these over the top reactions about things that seem so small. Ooh, can I read something to you right quick?
Mm-hmm, girl.
Sorry, y'all. I'm on a roll today. Okay, I've been holding on to all this stuff. Child, here it is. Okay. So I was reading, this is one of my new favorite books. And it's called So You Want to Talk About Race by Ijeoma Olu. And she gives this example in this book about what it feels like to experience racism. So I'm going to read you this snippet. Okay. Story time. Okay. So she says, imagine if you were walking down the street and every few minutes someone would punch you in the arm. You don't know who will be punching you and you don't know why. You are hurt and worried and weary. You are trying to protect yourself, but you can't get off the street. Then imagine somebody walks by, maybe gesticulating wildly in interesting conversation, and they punch you in the arm on accident. Now imagine that this is the last, that this is where you scream. That person may not have meant to punch you in the arm, but the issue for you is still the fact that people keep punching you in the arm. Regardless of why that last person punched you, there's a pattern that needs to be addressed, and your sore arm is testimony to that. But what often happens instead is that people demand that you prove that each person who punched you in the arm in the past meant to punch you in the arm before they'll acknowledge that too many people are punching you in the arm. The real tragedy is that you get punched in the arm constantly, not that one or two people who accidentally punched you in the arm might be accused of doing it on purpose. They still contributed to the pain that you have endured, a pain bigger than one punch. And they are responsible for being a part of that, whether they meant to or not. And if you just punch somebody in the arm, that would not be the time to talk about how important it is to protect your right to gesticulate wildly, even if sometimes you accidentally punch people. Once you know that your wild gesticulation is harming people, even if you've been raised to believe that it's your God-given right to gesticulate as wildly as your heart desires without any thought of consequences, you can no longer claim it's an accident when somebody gets hit. Mm. And what I submit to you is that that's what happens to us as Black people, is we walk into spaces, we don't know when we're going to get punched or where it's going to come from, but we're certain that it's going to happen. This happens to our children every day that they walk into school. This happens to our teachers when they walk into spaces that aren't safe. This happens to our administrators. This happens to people who don't even work in educational spaces, just going to their job, trying to mind their Black business. That you know every day something is going to happen that punches you in the arm. So then when the last straw comes and you're like, I can't do this no more, now you're aggressive. Why are you screaming? What is your problem? Nobody meant to punch you in the arm, but do you want to address the fact that I've been getting punched in the arm all day long? Think about our kids. They walk into these spaces. They already had a rough morning. They get off the bus. First thing they grit, take your hood off, pull your pants up, blah, 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 like all the things. They take that. Cool, cool. They get the first period first, but why are you late? Why are you doing this? Why you ain't do that? Sit down, shut up, pick up, blah, 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 right? Okay, that's cool. I'm gonna take that. Cool. Get the second period. Oh my God, can't you say good morning? Like all of this stuff. Then when they snap, we mad because they snap. But we haven't looked at all the punches in the arm they got before they got to the space where they snapped. We react to their response, but we don't deal with the antecedent of the behavior.
That's right.
To find out what's been happening the whole time to push them to the point where they feel like they have to scream because nobody has cared enough to see that they've been hurting and getting punched in the arm all day. We don't ask to look at their bruise. We don't ask to give them medical attention. We're not like, you know, let's sit down. Like, I'm so sorry that we don't even acknowledge it sometimes. I'm so sorry that you've been getting punched in the arm all day. That shouldn't be happening. Mm-mm. We mad at them because they had a reaction. This is what we mean when we say mental health counselors that are relatable. People that can look at the children and look at people and see that these are people. Mm-hmm. And that something else must be happening here that has caused this type of response or reaction. I'm a hush because that was a lot. My sermon, I think, has ended. Well, I'm a close.
You did that, friend. You did that. Z, y'all need to just go ahead and throw some stars in the collection plate, okay? I know y'all see it. We got goals to meet with Teaching for the Culture. And if you love this program and programmings that we do, throw some stars in the collection plate. It really does help. And the link to the book, I will link it to the Amazon link. And at no charge to you, you can purchase it. And it also helps Teaching for the Culture. We are official partners with Amazon now. Yeah, big
we
thing.
We are upgraded. We out here you. Making an imprint on this world. I am so excited to be a part of this movement and to just really see the national and international impact that Teaching for the Culture is making. So yay for that. Yes.
Amen. Amen. So yeah, well, thank y'all for tuning in or listening to The Whole Child. If you're listening to the replay or listening to our podcast platforms, please follow us. Kimberlyn, please tell the folks where they can find you and what you do.
Yeah, girl. So I'll be out here doing all the things, right? So so I'm clearly an educator, right? But I also share that I work in diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I do have a consulting business where I enter spaces and awaken people to their implicit bias and making sure that the foundation is laid in order to disrupt systemic racism, specifically in educational spaces. I also am a life coach. So in my life coach work, my life coach program is called Discover Your Destiny. So I help women to discover their God-given purpose so that they are able to walk the earth in the way that they were supposed to, making the impact that they're supposed to. I'm also an author. So I have a devotional project that's out called One Day at a Time. 365 days of devotions, affirmations, and encouragements. So it was a collective project. You can find that on my website, which is KimberlynJackson.com. And you can also find me on Instagram at KimberlynJ. And y'all let us know what y'all thought. Like, this was a lot, okay?
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
would love to get some feedback about what resonated with your spirit and what you got out of our broadcast today. And as Bianca said, hit us up with some stars, child. Buy some coffee, child. Subscribe to the Patreons. Like, listen, help the work get spread across this country. Okay, all right, I'm done.
Amen. Amen. So y'all have a wonderful night, and we love y'all, and see y'all next time.